Admit it. Our public debate has been reduced to reading each other's bumper stickers. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. I made up most of them, and most of those when I was mad as hell about something. So if you hate war, empire, central banking, cops, Republicans, Democrats, gun grabbers, and status of all stripes, go to LibertyStickers.com, and there's a good chance you'll find just what you need for the back of your truck. Own a bookstore? Sell guns at the show? Get the wholesaler's deal. Buy any 100 stickers and they drop down in price to a dollar a piece. You can spread the contempt and make a little money too. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. ScottHorton.org is the website. You can find all my interview archives there. More than 2,800 of them now. Going back to 2003. Also, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /ScottHortonShow. And I've got too many Facebook friends, but you can still subscribe to me, which I think is pretty much the same thing. I can't tell the difference anyway. Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /ScottHortonShow. Okay, next up is Chase Madar. He's a lawyer from New York. Wait, don't turn the channel. He's a good guy. And he wrote this book, right. The Passion of Bradley Manning. My man. The American hero, Bradley Manning. He's on trial right now. Well, air quotes, silly, kind of ironical, air quotes, trial, military court-martial type of thing right now in Maryland. Can you give us the latest on the persecution of our modern-day Superman?
Yeah. God, thanks for the airtime, first of all.
Sure. I'm happy to have you.
So we're wrapping up week four of the court martial. After 3 years of imprisonment for Bradley Manning, the court martial, these things are supposed to be designed for speed and efficiency, is finally underway. And it's been an interesting 4 weeks, slow moving, tedious at times. I was down there 2 weeks ago for a spell. I've been following it from afar, checking in with Kevin Costola on Fire Dog Lake and also with Nathan Fuller of the Bradley Manning Support Network. They're both writing great summaries and reports every day. And here's what's happening. I mean, the military is pressing hard to go for everything for the two most serious charges against Manning, aiding the enemy and the Espionage Act of 1917 violations. Now, going into this court-martial, Manning had already pleaded guilty to the 10 lesser of the 22 charges against him, things like unauthorized use of a government computer, yada, yada, even though they're not, crimes that would chill the blood, they do carry a maximum penalty of 20 years altogether. How much they will determine ultimately is all up to one person, and that's the judge in this case, because Manning opted not to have the panel of experts, which is the military equivalent of a jury. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be all up to this one lady. Now, one big thing that's been getting hashed out in courtroom is, were these records closely held? That's a term of art, closely held, from the Espionage Act of 1917. And it seems that they really weren't closely held, these documents that were leaked, in any meaningful sense of those words. The reports that we're getting from Forward Operating Base Hammer and from the IT guys there, from the Army intelligence guys there, from the Brigadier Commander Miller, who testified this morning, is that there was really just a total lack of information security, InfoSec, no discipline and no enforcement of all the security protocols there. And Brigadier Commander Miller testified today that it would, quote, not register as a problem if a soldier at the private rank was surfing the SIPR net. That's the secret government network that contained all the info that Manning gave to WikiLeaks. And this is essential. I mean, it speaks to a kind of counterintuitive question behind all this. Why are these massive security breaches so easy? You'd think that the biggest security breach in U.S. history, which Manning pulled off, would require suction cups on the ceiling. It'd be kind of like a scene from one of the Mission Impossible movies. In fact, it was incredibly easy. And you also wonder, why weren't there more breaches if 1.4 million people have access to some top secret material and have top secret clearance, how come there's only one Bradley Manning?
Right. Well, 'cause everybody else is a tool, I guess. That's how they get a government job in the first place. But anyway, let me ask you this. Sorry, I'm sort of biased on that question. Same answer every time for me on that. How does that really help Bradley Manning, though, if they show that his bosses and all of his colleagues had this very lax sense of security? It's not like he accidentally got the message that it would be okay if he went ahead and turned it over to the Post.
Well, it helps in two ways. First of all, one of the elements of the crimes that are part of the Espionage Act of 1917 statute is that the information has to be closely held. And that means that the prosecutors have the burden of production and the burden of proof that to show that all this information that Manning gave to WikiLeaks was, quote, closely held.
So even if it's supposed to be closely held, if it's actually not in practice closely held, that's a argument that can actually work in court?
It can work sometimes. It's going to be, of course, up to the judge to decide whether documents that are classed as secret or confidential are ipso facto closely held, or if it turns out that since there's no security to speak of, really none, then they aren't closely held in any real life sense. Mm-hmm. And this is an important distinction. We see this with the NSA spying case now, too, that legal barriers to security breaches and to misbehavior on the part of national security personnel, that there can be legal barriers to this that are completely meaningless in practice. You see this that this was the case at Forward Operating Base Hammer in Iraq, where Bradley Manning was stationed. You also see this in the NSA, and that's what's coming out, that even though NSA personnel may not have legal authority to access somebody's email, it's incredibly easy for them to do so. And that's why we heard a little bit about this back in 2008 when it came out that NSA personnel were listening in on phone sex between U.S. Army officers in Iraq and you know, their friends at home. Now, they weren't able to do that legally, but they were, of course, able to do it in the real life sense. And that's something always to keep in mind when you hear official statements from the military or from the national security industry talking about, oh, no, so-and-so can't do this. We can't do this. Well, there's can't in the legal sense, meaning you're not allowed to, but then there's the can't in the actual sense. Is there any technical barrier? Is there any enforcement barrier where you're going to get in actual trouble for doing something?
Right.
But that's what we have here. It also affects this whole closely held thing, sentencing. And it will be an argument of the defense that Bradley Manning's punishment should be lighter if these security protocols were completely ignored and flouted at every opportunity in the base. Now, of course, no one else was giving documents to WikiLeaks at Forward Operating Base Hammer, but it still speaks to a complete lack of any real discipline, and that has to spread some authority up the chain of command, or some responsibility up the chain of command.
So that's basically what's been going on this week, is the argument over the closely held, is that?
That's been going up. There's some other things, too, that are quite interesting. I mean, being down there, it's a mixture of total tedium, but with flashes of really interesting. It's slow-moving. It's kind of glacial.
Right.
But one case that the prosecution has been slowly trying to build is they're trying to really besmirch Bradley Manning's motives. They're trying to paint him as someone who went into his operating base, Forward Operating Base Hammer, with the instant intention of leaking things to WikiLeaks. Now, Bradley Manning and his lawyers are saying, no, he had a crisis of conscience that didn't happen until very late in 2009. But but the government is trying to undermine that. And what they're trying to do is argue that Bradley Manning got a hold of the global address list. This is kind of a directory of U.S. personnel in Iraq with their emails and their phone books, and that he gave it to WikiLeaks. so that they could leak it and use it.
I'm sorry for interrupting here, but how ridiculous is that, that they've got a master phone book of everybody to be compromised in the first place? That is absolutely ridiculous. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's terrible information security right there that it's so accessible. Now, they've shown that this document was downloaded, at least for a time, onto Bradley Manning's drive. They don't have any evidence, however, that he gave it to WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks never published it. It never, contrary to a lot of myth-making and panic and hysteria, it never got to Osama bin Laden. All they have to show this is a tweet that they were able to undig from the internet long ago of WikiLeaks soliciting on Twitter, hey, we want to get a hold of as many .mil email addresses as possible. Now, the reason WikiLeaks wants this is so they could directly solicit soldiers themselves, saying, hey, if you have any interesting material, please send it to us. But for some reason, that doesn't bother me or strike me as horribly objectionable that they would do this. But they clearly want a global address list. They know that Bradley Manning had it on his computer, but there's no evidence that he actually gave it to WikiLeaks. It's entirely circumstantial at this point. And, in a real court of law, if that should not stick, in a criminal court of law where you have a high standard, proof beyond a reasonable doubt, that would not be enough. You have a different standard of proof in a court martial, and we'll see what the judge makes of it.
Well, I talked with Nathan Fuller the other day, and he was talking about the Guarani video, the massacre in Afghanistan, and how the government, this is where I was telling you earlier before we went on the air, where we were joking about, didn't the prosecution discuss their own case with each other, like over the table before they took it into the courtroom, where they were just certain they were going to pin on Manning that he had leaked this Guarani video way before he supposedly started leaking, according to his own guilty plea, and then that would prove his nefarious conspiracy with Julian Assange to commit espionage, etc. And then they couldn't prove that at all, and under cross-examination, their story fell apart.
Yeah, it turns out there was another leaker who had, because I guess Bradley Manning is not the only guy with a public spirit and a conscience in the military, but someone else by the name of Katz, who had given it to or sent a copy of the Guarani Farah massacre video to WikiLeaks. And so it doesn't look like that should stick. Now, of course, I say should rather than will. But that is incredibly weak circumstantial evidence there. And why is the prosecution doing it then? Well, for two reasons. First of all, they want to nail Bradley Manning with everything they can. They're not letting go. They've spent 3 years on this case. They're pressing for everything. Second reason is they are building up to get Julian Assange as well. It's like when you're playing pool and you pay attention to the leave, where you leave the cue ball. It's almost as important as the shot you make. And they are desperate to implicate Julian Assange as someone who was running Bradley Manning and actively involved in getting these files, that he wasn't just a more or less passive recipient of them, but that he had an active role in getting the leaks, prodding Bradley Manning, directing him, guiding him, and that way they hope to get him Assange on espionage charges. And we'll see. I mean, it does not look like these two bits of evidence should stick, because the case is entirely circumstantial and very weakly circumstantial, especially in the case of the video.
Yeah, and I guess I'd have to go back and double-check his testimony where he pleaded guilty and to many facts, not including the Guarani video, for example, or whatever. But was there any room in his narrative for, sounds like he's lying there and that he probably was already working with Assange or something? Because the way he told the story was, I tried to call the Post and I tried to email the Times, or maybe it was the other way around, and they never got back to me. And so I thought, well, I guess I'll have to give it to Julian Assange then.
Bradley Manning's first-person account, he holds up pretty well. And it's not just a matter of why he did it. It's a matter of when he did these things. The timing is crucial for the case that the prosecution is trying to build against both Manning and then with an eye to Assange. And because they do have evidence that the Guarani Fara video made it to WikiLeaks back in November of 2009. And Bradley Manning is insisting that he did not give anything to WikiLeaks until January, February of 2010. And that's after he had the crisis of conscience in Iraq, which was around Christmas time when the whole forward operating base Hammer was celebrating because a Humvee full of soldiers had narrowly missed an IED that happened to be run over by a truck full of Iraqi civilians that had gone off the road to make way for the military Humvee, and then several of the civilians died, and Bradley Manning did not think that was anything worth cheering about. That's his story. So, again, it's the timing of Bradley Manning's leaks that's crucial both to the defense and to the prosecution, and I think the defense's version is holding up much better.
Yeah. And now, I've actually been trying to keep tabs on my short, half-informed list of prosecutorial failures so far during this alleged trial. Another one of them was the Excel sheet that they said the fact that Manning had even compiled the thing in the first place, which I guess was made up of Iraq war logs, I think, that proved that I forget if it was in the same category there. Where it was supposed to prove an early start to preparing to leak or exactly what their point was. But in any case, his commanding officer said, oh, no, the Excel sheet, that's because I told them to do that under cross-examination. That was another one of these where these, you know, I could see these guys being assistant DAs in your average county in America too, right? I mean, they're just a bunch of attorneys.
No, I mean, you almost felt embarrassed for them at that moment. And speaks to a lack of preparation, even though they've had all the time in the world to to put a case together against this young private. Oh, my. So a lot of it is going to come down to the judge in the end. And this is an intensely politicized case, and the bulk of the political pressure in this country is against Private Manning. I don't think that the judge would feel any political pressure within the military, certainly not outside of it either, if she is really harsh with the sentence and her interpretation of the law. And that's unfortunate, and that's why, you know, organizing and support of Private Manning is so important in the long run, because the court of public opinion, even though it's not that crucial right now at Fort Meade, is going to be in the long run what gets clemency for Bradley Manning or not. Mm-hmm. And I think that if the judge were to drop all the charges or give it an incredibly light sentence, and I think that is the right thing to do, then she would probably be swiftly transferred to the Aleutian Islands, and it would just be a huge scandal. And yeah, that's why I predict there will still be a very harsh sentence, 40 to 50 years. There is a possibility of good time served resulting in time off and a kind of parole, but I expect a very harsh sentence, even though the case that's being built is full of holes and full of weaknesses.
Yeah.
There are different kinds of injustices in a courtroom. I mean, sometimes you have a good laws that are just so manipulated that they're used to railroad someone. And then you have another kind where you just have a terrible system of laws being applied as they're meant to, and that itself is the injustice. I think this case is somewhere between the two, but kind of closer to the second, where the problem is really systemic, and it's less an abuse of good laws rather than just the use of really terrible laws and a whole terrible system of information security that does not serve our interests as a people in the United States.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you're so right about how all the different political factions inside and outside the military and the political parties and the TV people and everybody, they're all lined up against Manning. They've got
a pretty solid consensus against him, and it would really take a gigantic outcry in support of him in a way that we haven't seen yet, unfortunately, I don't think, to really change, you know, the direction the wind is blowing on that one, the political pressure on that one, as you say, and especially when, boy, he really made them angry. You know what I mean? So he might be a hero to us, but he's really a bad guy to them, and they're determined to really make a bad guy out of him, and, you know, and an example out of him for the rest. And Daniel Ellsberg was on the show last week and pointed out that, you know, Nixon's persecution of him is what got him off. That basically the judge and the prosecutor, the federal prosecutor, at some point threw up their hands in the middle of the trial. I think it was when they were informed that Nixon had hired Cuban hitmen to kill Ellsberg, to take him out. That was his incriminating as they got, and the judge saw that and was like, all right, enough, you're free to go, basically. But we don't have anything like that here. It wasn't the political pressure that freed Ellsberg. He'd be doing life in prison right now.
Yeah.
It was Nixon's illegality against him that got him set free.
No, Nixon was about as subtle as Idi Amin, the way he went after it. I mean, my favorite piece of just the corruption, that was just, it wasn't just corrupt, it was just so stupid and clumsy that you kind of had to, I mean, it was just jaw-dropping, is that I think Nixon had Haldeman or Mitchell approach the judge in the case 2 weeks into the criminal case and say, hey, Judge Byrne, you're a smart guy. How'd you like to be head of the FBI? J. Edgar Hoover just died. We got a nice job opening. And the judge in his vanity thought, oh, well, I'm a smart guy. Oh, great. Well, I'll get back to you on that. And then he just woke up in the middle of the night a few days later realizing that they were trying to bribe him. And he had to report that to his superiors in the Department of Justice because it was obviously just, you know, an attempt to suborn him. Good times. Yeah. And, you know, I wish people, because there's so many people who support Daniel Ellsberg still. They say, oh, he did the right thing. He was great. He's heroic, blah, blah, blah. But then they hasten to condemn both Manning and Edward Snowden. And they really need to understand that there is no great legal distinction between what Ellsberg did and what Manning did. I think the major legal distinction is that all of the thousands of documents that Ellsberg leaked were uniformly top secret, whereas not a single one of the documents leaked by Manning is top secret. And there are all kinds of reasons why there was more sympathy for Ellsberg among the liberal class, among the intelligentsia, the media class, the legal profession, than there is for Manning. And, you know, none of those reasons are good. And of course, you hear it from the mouth of Ellsberg himself when you had him on your show.
Yeah. All right, now, so I got three reasons where automagically this trial shouldn't have even been held at all and he ought to be free to go, and that is the way he has been held already for 3 years, which is punishment itself before his court-martial even starts. And even if you sign up the military, I think you're still supposed to get a speedy trial. And then the other thing is the way they at least abused and humiliated him, if not outright tortured him in Quantico. And then the other thing is the command influence of the president, the secretary of defense, and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, all three pronouncing him guilty, which amounts to a direct order to his judge to convict him. And so do you agree with all three of those?
Absolutely. Those are three legal reasons to just end this nonsense right now. The problem is those perfectly adequate reasons, and each one would be adequate in itself, they're not catching fire, and they don't have the political support behind them to make them catch fire. And that's why the trial grinds on, and that's why Manning will almost certainly be given a sentence measured in decades.
Right, but the false premise of my question being that there's a rule of law when, in fact, there's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Just as long as we've got that clear, I guess. Well, now, here's the thing, too. That 3 years that we mentioned where he's been held without trial, a lot of people maybe forgot just how important these documents have been. And you're right when you said that none of it was top secret. It's kind of an argument for his acquittal or light sentencing anyway. It was all just secret and confidential level stuff. As Robert Gates, the former Secretary of Defense, admitted, there was no blood spilt. No Quislings got their throats slit because their name was in the Afghan war logs or anything like that. And yet, some of the truths that came out of the Iraq and Afghan war logs and the State Department cables have been, I mean, you could credit Manning's WikiLeaks release with, you know, some kind of 60-70% of the most important news stories of the last 2-3 years. It's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've learned so much, and there have already been, you know, immediate, tangible benefits from this. It's starting with the small but important role that the diplomatic leaks played in catalyzing the revolt in Tunisia. I mean, isn't it our official U.S. policy to spread democracy to the Middle East and all that good stuff? Well, here's a country that rose up and got rid of a really nasty dictator and his whole horrible family. In part, and I don't want to overdo this, but I'm saying in part, because they got the unvarnished assessment of corruption in that regime from American diplomatic officials there. And they got that firsthand thanks to Bradley Manning. You know, that's something that Bradley Manning can be really proud of. We should all be happy about that.
Yeah, and, you know, all journalists ought to be happy about that. I mean, I don't know. It's amazing the way that they were able to create the journalistic consensus against him and on the side of the state when he's the number one best thing that happened to journalism since forever ago.
You know, you just wonder where are even the self-preservation instincts of our journalists and our major newspapers. You know, they're not even sticking up for themselves in this case. Don't they want more good stories? If you run hundreds of stories based on Bradley Manning's leaks and then go out of your way to depict him as a weirdo rather than as a trusted, valuable source, I mean, it's no wonder that our newspapers are going belly up. And our magazines, too. Good Lord, they deserve it. And I also want to point out, though, the incredible value to scholarship, foreign policy scholarship that you have out of these. Like, I'm holding in my hand right now a really terrific book called Useful Enemies: When Waging Wars is More Important Than Winning Them by David Keene, a professor at the London School of Economics, published by Yale University Press. He uses a lot of the WikiLeaks material. So do Flint Leverett and Hillary Mann Leverett in Going to Tehran, that terrific book. You've had the Leveretts on your show, haven't you?
100 times, yeah.
Yeah, 100, about 100 times. And they build on the diplomatic cables, the crucial building block of their valuable book. And Jeremy Scahill, I mean, one of the best national security journalists, who's, you know, one of the few who's not a fraud, builds on them in his Dirty Wars. That's out, both the book and the movie. So, you know, what's not to like here?
Well, that's what I'm saying, too. I give him credit for the end of the Iraq War, too, because don't forget, Obama was trying to stay, and yet the news from the Iraq war logs were enough that at least Maliki could point at the politics in Iraq and say, I'm sorry, I just can't do it no matter how bad I want to help you.
Yeah, it was the leaked accounts of the Haditha massacre where a Marine unit, you know, killed execution style a room of a couple dozen civilians, mostly women and children. And no one in the end suffered any real penalty. I think just the commander of the unit got a negligence and dereliction of duty, but he never did any time or suffered any real penalty for it. And when news got out about that and the details of that, thanks to WikiLeaks in Iraq, that pissed off a lot of Iraqis. And the prospect of granting legal immunity to foreign soldiers who do things like that was politically impossible. And that's why Maliki couldn't do it. And, you know, that's all for the best. I mean, we all wanted, American soldiers to come home at that point. I mean, aside from the Democrats and the Republicans establishment, but thank God they're back.
Yep. All right. Hey, listen, thanks very much for your time, and thanks very much for sticking up for Bradley Manning. Not enough people do.
Thanks so much for the airtime, Scott. Take care now.
Sure thing. Good to talk to you again. All right, everybody, that is Chase Madar. He's a lawyer from New York, and he wrote the book The Passion of Bradley Manning. You can often find what he writes at tomdispatch.com.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new project, Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. They've got two new audiobooks read by the deepest voice in libertarianism, the great historian Jeff Riggenbach. Our Last Hope, Rediscovering the Lost Path to Liberty by Michael Meharry of the 10th Amendment Center is available now. And Beyond Democracy, co-authored by Frank Karsten of the Mises Institute Netherlands and journalist Carl Beckman, will be released this month. And they're only just getting started. So check out listenandthink.com. You may be able to get your first audiobook absolutely free. That's Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Every month, Plumline Individualist editor Sheldon Richman brings you important news and opinions on policy by heroic FFF President Jacob Hornberger, hard-hitting journalist columnist James Bovard, and others from the best of the libertarian movement. The Future of Freedom tackles the most important issues facing our country, from the bankrupt and insane welfare and regulatory states, to foreign wars and empire, the dismal state of our economy, and ongoing assaults on civil liberties. This society needs peace and freedom for prosperity to prevail. Subscribe to the Future of Freedom in print for just $25 a year or online for $15 a year at fff.org/subscribe. And hurry up, because this summer they'll be running my articles about the wars in Libya, Syria, and Somalia in the Future of Freedom too. That's fff.org/subscribe for the Future of Freedom. And tell them Scott sent you. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against a depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. Oh, man, I'm late. Sure hope I can make my flight.
Stand there.
Me? I am standing here.
Come here.
Okay.
Hands up. Turn around.
Oh, easy.
Into the scanner.
Ooh, what's this in your pants?
Hey, slow down. It's just my...
Hold it right there. Your wallet has tripped the metal detector. What's this? The bill of rights?
That's right. It's just a harmless stainless steel business card-sized copy of the Bill of Rights from SecurityEdition.com. There for exposing the TSA as a bunch of liberty-destroying goons who've never protected anyone from anything. Sir, now give me back my wallet and get out of my way. Got a plane to catch.
Have a nice day.
Play a leading role in the security theater with the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's the size of a business card, so it fits right in your wallet, and it's guaranteed to trip the metal detectors wherever the police state goes. That's SecurityEdition.com. And don't forget their great Fourth Amendment socks.
Hey, guys, I got his laptop.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. First of all, thanks to the show's sponsors and donors who make it possible for me to do this. Secondly, I need more sponsors and more donors if the show is to continue. ScottHorton.org/donate has all the links to use PayPal, Give.org, Google Wallet, WePay.com, and even Bitcoins to make a donation in any amount. You can also sign up for monthly donations of small and medium-sized amounts through PayPal and Give.org. Again, that's ScottHorton.org/donate for all the links. To advertise on the site or the show, email me, Scott@ScottHorton.org. And thanks.